Blog Talk Radio.
The bloom, the swoon, the sugar's on your block. The planets let them flash in the corners of New York. The ghetto, the meadow, the Mr. Butterflew. The honey bugs dug and licked the honeydew. The sun, the kiss, the funk for a bit. The lips with the soul and some jazz for your hips. The puff, the buzz, the lids be heavy slick. The mecca get a rush when the beats be very thick. The hands, the feet, the brown baby treat. The femmes fumble loose and drink the noodle juice. The steps, the flams, the planets got damn. The people get a grip with the tape from a jam. A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
Uh-huh, a nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk. The big, the fat, the cool, cool cat. The psychedelic soul puts the planets on the map. The chic, the love, the far out name. The lack of the funk's the main, why we came. The boogie gets done, the colors won't run. The funk hits the square, the kids gotta come. The pizza with the pop, the West Wharf stop. The crew after crew that do the grasshop. The true cool is black, the new school is fat. The beats by the ounce, the funk by the pack. The groove is the fix, the jitterbug's fix. The hanging off the butts with the fat soul kicks. That's my nickel bag of funk, my nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
I said a nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
Oh, a nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk. The wide, the hip, dig it, it's the trip. The loop, the scene, and the funkifying it. The sounds, the pounds, the stacks, the flares. The baggy, baggy jeans, the naughty, naughty hair. The twinkle in the eye, the kisses live and fly. The crew from the sky, the stuff that gets you high. The action, the work for the rhyme. We goes the whole nine. The papers won't rot, the vapors get got. The streets get the buzz, the funk off your block. The opium groove, the smacked out soul. The kicking it live, the fat gotta roll. With my nickel bag of funk, my nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk.
It's a nickel bag of funk, a nick bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
Nickel bag, a nickel bag. Ladybugger hit you with a nickel bag. A nickel bag, a nickel bag. Butterfly hit you with a nickel bag. A nickel bag, a nickel bag. Doodlebugger hit you with a nickel bag. A nickel bag, a nickel bag. DP's always hit you with a nickel bag.
Welcome to Headliners Ball. This show's format gives both authors and audience alike the chance to entertain a deeper discussion regarding a choice selection of poems from the author's catalog of work. Headliners will perform pieces in their intended style. In turn, they will receive encouraging feedback from an all-inclusive panel of late-night poet callers. Additionally, there'll be a chance for listeners to inquire about intended meaning, inspiration, nuance, poetic device, and any other interesting details that the author is willing to expand upon. I am your host, Jeremy F., and as always, I am joined by my lovely, talented, ever-present co-hostess, Pam Ray, who, after a spurred-up case of laryngitis, Pam was actually called in to sit ringside last night in the Stanley Cup playoffs and do some color commentary. She did the job well and still found time to call into late-night poet callers. Pam, you multi-talented turkey, how are you?
Oh, my goodness, I am doing great, my turkey brother. As always, looking forward to hanging out with you and other cool poets and just delving into and discussing the poetry.
Let's do it. Are you ready to make some introductions for us?
Absolutely. I would like to welcome Gavin Brenner and Jenny Hunt to the show. Welcome, Gavin and Jenny. Glad you could both be here.
Hello, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Well, I know you're a little bit nervous, But chivalry is definitely not dead here on Late Night Poets. So, Jenny, you get to go first. It's gonna be a great night. So just take a breath and let's do it. I've got your first poem, Lusting After Him, Lead Her to Her Grave. Ready on the board when you are.
Thank you. Okay. Lusting after him led to her grave. One autumn eve, she went strolling, met up with her lover boy she met in school. Gorgeous from head to toe, she couldn't keep her eyes off of him. Before the meeting, though, she was set up. Knowing she had a crush on him, Aubrey pulled a mean prank, fooling her with lies, convincing her he had a crush on her, too. She tells Jasmine he wants to ask a question. Going to that joker of a boy, all giddy and smiling, he asks Jasmine out while holding her hand. She goes to meet him after school, when all of a sudden she sees him kissing Aubrey, walking together, holding her hand now in the baseball field. Seeing the betrayal, she starts to cry hysterically. Crane points her, they just laugh and point. Running away from the field, her eyes too blurry from tears. She doesn't see it coming. Honk, honk, the semi blows. Too late. Their lousy lust for each other sent poor Jasmine to an early grave. Evil Aubrey and that boy saw the whole thing. While at Jasmine's funeral, they claimed to be her best friend as they thanked her, winking at her coffin for introducing them. End poem.
See, you have nothing to worry about. That was an awesome read. A great start for the evening. Pam, start us off with comments, please.
Yeah, I really like this. It's really in-depth and dark storytelling that makes me think of some of those, like, TV shows or movies. Like, it makes me think kind of the idea of the movie Heathers or the TV show, I think it is. What's it called? Like, Bad Girls or something like that. I can't remember. But you know what I mean? Like, you just basically get that kind of vibe from it. Really a great look at a dark right on the plotting death. And you know, like, you can definitely, like, I see how it's a story, but I also see how there's a sense of truth to it too, because you know, it's horrible the way people will talk behind people's backs and, you know, do whatever they want to meet their own ends, you know, to get what they want, the people that they are willing to hurt. And of course, the powerful ending, honk, honk, the semi blows, too late, their lousy lust for each other sent poor Jasmine to an early grave, evil Aubrey and that boy saw the whole thing. While at Jasmine's funeral, they claimed to be her best friend as they thanked her, winking at her coffin for introducing them. You know, just wow, that really takes an extremely dark twist and just very well done. And my question for you, Jenny, is I would like to know how you got started writing poetry.
Basically, because I have a lot of, I have depression, and so I had a lot of feelings built up, and so it helped me to write in my journal. And then I had a lot of poems written down, and I was like, what am I going to do with all these? And then I found All Poetry, and then I decided to share it with you guys.
I like that. Very cool. And yes, definitely that a lot of people who start writing do so because it is so cathartic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I love that, Jenny. Go ahead, Gavin. Dive in. What do you have to offer?
Well, sounds to me like we're going to have a lot of recurring themes here tonight, if we're going to start off with this one. I like the tale about the dangers of unchecked desires and the consequences of betraying someone's trust. I think it portrays a world where cruel intentions and deceitful actions can have fateful consequences in the world we live in. And it serves as a good warning to readers about the importance of being honest and true to oneself and others. I like it.
I kind of got it from that movie, Cruel Intentions, and then being in sixth grade, a kid did that to me, pulling a prank, so.
Cruel Intentions is a good one. I'm glad that's one of your inspirations for this one, and I like how Pam keyed in on Mean Girls or Heathers or anything like that. I think that's all very true. No, great comment, Gavin. And what I like about this, Jenny, is what we have seven stanzas here roughly, and you're able to touch on emotion. Storytelling, first of all, don't let me get ahead of myself. Storytelling in poetry is a fun ride. I love when it's done and done well and can get engaged because really you have to go a really, really long distance to tell a full story, a full-bodied story in the framework of a poem, even if you make the poem a little bit more lengthy. And you did that here. But what I really like and what I started to comment on is in seven stanzas, you hit on seven different emotions. I mean, I'm probably exaggerating, but there's envy in this. There's lust. There's anger. There's betrayal. There's even cunning there in the end. And you were able to do it all contained within those stanzas. I was able to actually connect and feel with this story, and I like the fact that it was done, again, in such short measure. When I feel that poetry, the point of poetry is to connect with a reader and hit on emotion, usually I'm only trying to pin one or two. The fact that you ate such a big cookie by going down the whole litany of this whole saga, this whole soap opera in this story, and come across successfully, it brought a smile to my face. Even if it's, and I say that jokingly, even though it has a dark theme there at the end, it brings a smile because it's so successful, I guess is what I'm getting at. So bravo to you. I really enjoy this one.
Thank you.
What I want you to expand upon, this is always usually my first question, in your whole body of work, to introduce yourself here on Headliners, what does this one mean to you? Why did you choose to introduce yourself with this poem?
Well, it kind of gives, like, an introduction to, like, why and how I am the way I am and, like, how I perceive people now. And I don't, like, it's just, you got to be careful who you trust anymore. And it kind of lets me warn other people that I'm a deep writer and I'm not always going to be, like, describing just how pretty the flower is, but I'm going to dig deeper. I guess.
I really like the way you described that. It's not just a red rose. It's a red rose that has 1,000 different emotions carried in it. So I think it's a great explanation. I like that a lot. All right, sister, your next one, Crazy for You Always, is up on the board, sitting underneath the hot tub, ready when you are.
So Crazy for You Always. Today I love you. Tomorrow I'll love you too. Under the pale blue moon and burning, blazing yellow-orange sun, forever and always, I'll love you. When I'm wrapped up safely in your arms, I'm thankful for your warmth. When you cook for me and rub my feet, I do notice the little things and I'll never forget. I am grateful for all you do, especially knowing your limits. You don't have to spoil me, but you choose to. For that, I also thank and love you. Toward you, I run, and I rarely run. Crazy for you, I will do anything. This door of love opened for us. I will never close it, for my love will always be the window giving you the air you need. And poem.
See, Pam, I'm not crazy for wanting to always offer to rub your feet. Go ahead, Gavin. Go ahead, Gavin. Start us off with comments, please.
Okay. I like this piece, too, a lot. I'm probably going to like a lot of your work. I've actually been reading some of it since I started joining your contests, Jenny. So I like a lot of your work. I'm a big fan. I think I like the brevity of this. I think I like the brevity of this most. So it's got a ton of, like, warming imagery. And we use warmth in this stanza when I'm wrapped safely in your arms, too. So it's complimentary to that. I think it has like a warm color to the poem, too, when I'm, like, seeing this. It's, like, it's a lot of, like, reds, oranges, and that kind of stuff. I think there's like a personal aspect to it, like towards you I run and I rarely run, right? It's like giving more of a personality out. So I think it's an interesting personal tribute to probably like a introspective love story that like actually has the element of truth behind it, right? So yeah, I like it.
Thank you.
Great comment, Gavin. No, and there's a couple things I like about this one, Jenny. I like, it's never said enough, in my opinion, in a relationship, saying the golden words, I love you. And the fact that it's pounded so repetitiously in this poem, it's a dedication, and it's a steadfastness to, it's almost commitment. And so I really like the fact that the emphasis and the repetition on this, and it's so blatant. It gives the strength and, and the commitment. But it's not the commitment to the obvious things, because like as I joked in the opening is, you say, when you cook for me and rub my feet, it's the little things. It's all the, you can say it, I'm grateful for all you do, especially knowing your limits. I mean, you're picking love, but you're picking love because of the non-conspicuous items, which makes it feel like it's a much deeper love. So I think you're hitting the commitment, you're hitting the dedication, you're hitting the pining, you're hitting the love from two different angles that are really diametric, but it works well on how you marry them in this poem. So I think it's really, really well put together. Very cool. And I like what Gavin said, that it's done in short measure too, because I think the emotion comes through again in quick time, which is a talent, Jenny. So this is a great poem. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
So go ahead and tell us about what it takes for you to write a poem. When you're sitting down, what does it look like? Is it on the computer? Are you doing it in a special spot in your room? Are you doing a lot of editing? Can you kind of walk us through your whole poetry writing process?
It depends on where I am, to be honest. It's usually at home on my phone, and when it's on the phone, it's a lot of editing because it looks different than the computer, so I never know if I have the right lines, so that's always fun. But also when I'm on break at work, I do a lot of my poetry at work. And that's on the computer.
That officially makes you a paid author, a paid poetress. If you're writing your poetry at work, then you're getting paid and you're writing poetry, so that's okay.
I love it.
Go ahead, Pam. Would you like to comment?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and I have to say, that's a great way to use your work time, and very cool. But I really like this, the imagery and under the pale blue moon and burning blazing yellow orange sun forever and always, I'll love you. I really like how, this is a beautiful heartfelt write. I like how your first two writes have shown us different sides of yourself. The person who understands what it's like to be hurt and betrayed, but also the person who understands what it's like to be truly loved, and that love comes in the little gestures. I have to agree with Jeremy that the stanza, I am grateful for all you do, and the one before that is especially strong. You don't have to spoil me, but choose to. For that, I also thank and love you. A lot of heart put into these lines. You can definitely tell from a lot of your body and work that you definitely really bear your emotions to the poetry community. So excellent writing and very well done.
Thank you.
Beautiful comment, Pam. Beautiful comment. I really like that. I had some problems posting your next one, but I think I got it figured out. So, yeah. Cherish children, cancel corruptions is up, ready when you are.
So cherish children, cancel corruptions. Stop the madness. I happen to think of the children. Whatever happened to, they are the future. Too many concrete angels cremated too soon. I've been groomed and shamefully violated and disgusted. Years taken away from me, I'll never get back. Thinking it was just happening to me, sadly, I was mistaken. Child grooming and slaughters are on the gruesome rampage. Everywhere I look, another abuse victim, another death. Don't have kids if you don't tend to treat them lovingly. pro-life is exactly that, so why fight for it if you don't truly mean it? Tired of the hypocrisy. It's making my blood boil. No child deserves the death penalty, execution style. They deserve patience and guidance, love and tenderness. If you cannot handle their presence, don't reproduce. Or if need, then give them to someone who will cherish them. The abuse and trafficking has to come to an end. Where is cancel culture and the authorities now? Call it wishful thinking, so be it. But this is a new era, many options that don't involve hurting children. Do what's right for them, not you. Take a stand. Don't be selfish. End poem.
Amazing message, and very well performed, Jenny. I mean, I was nervous for you because how much we've talked about how you were apprehensive about joining our show, and you're kicking butt tonight, sister. You're doing a great job of reading these poems. And I really appreciate that. I know you're still probably nervous, but calm. You're doing great, and it's not coming through. I'm not saying that because it's coming through in your reads. Your reads are beautiful. And the only reason I'm talking about your read is because this is such a powerful message. I mean, this can almost be screamed in heavy metal because it's such a powerful, fist-pounding, passionate message that you put here, and it even comes through, especially in the second, that it comes through as something very personal to you, something that has happened in your life, and we don't even need to get into any of that. But the point is, I appreciate the way you read this and the smoothness that you add to it because it's not lost. Because when I read this the first time, I was like, oh, she's going to get on this. She's going to get on that soapbox, and she's going to be banging her head because, again, it's a powerful political or social commentary. But it's okay to still present it in an artistic method the way that you just did it. And I think it added even poetic value. And this isn't going to come across right, but it adds beauty because we're talking about poetry. It adds beauty, and someone can realize that you can convey and put your point out there to the world without doing that, without screaming at 80 decibels. You can still touch an audience and have it come through in a number of ways. And it doesn't make it any less powerful, in my opinion. So bravo, and keep reading, sister, because keep calling and keep reading because you're doing a great job.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Of course, no. I hope you're having fun. And I want to know where you find your inspiration. I mean, something like this, you've given us, this is the third one tonight, and you're coming at us from different angles, which I very much appreciate. I'm glad you took the time in your set list to find a variety because it gives us much more to explore about your talent as a poet. But you want to talk a little bit about where you usually find your muse, where you usually find inspiration to write?
Yeah, usually my family or like when I'm mad or happy, like I just have to get it out. Or like a lot of the contests now have inspired me because I used to just write my feelings out. But then now that I discovered you guys and all these contests, it's helped me, well, with vocabulary, number one, and then also just letting my voice out there because I used to just be shut down. But now I'm able to kind of quietly take a stand in poetry and hopefully poetically and not too outlandish or out of the box or whatever.
Especially, certainly when you come to poetry, you can never be too much out of the box. So I think you found a great stage to explore your artwork. So it's definitely been much enjoyable, and we're glad to have you tonight. Go ahead and jump in, Pam.
This is definitely a strong voice to write on an important topic. You know, I really feel like there are certain things that all of us need to be fully aware of. And one of the things is that, you know, we should be stewards of this earth, and we should be caretakers of those who cannot, you know, take care of themselves. And, you know, that includes children and the elderly. You know, and again, a voice with a right with a lot of heart in it, you know, and great alliteration in the title, Cherish Children, Cancel Corruption. You know, that is so true, and it's such a shame that there are people out there, you know, that want to hurt children that hurt the elderly, that even animal abuse, you know, it's all You know, I mean, we're supposed to, no matter what your spiritual beliefs, you know, we're supposed to be stewards of this earth and caretakers of those who can't care for themselves. I like the end that you bring up the abuse and trafficking. The abuse and trafficking has to come to an end. Where is cancel culture and the authorities now? Call it wishful thinking, so be it. But this is a new era, many options that don't involve hurting children. And that is so true. There's so much truth. And I always like it and admire it when a poet uses their talent and their voice to speak up, you know, about an issue like child abuse. So powerful, right, and very well done. And I would like to know, Jenny, if you have any favorite classic poets or if you have any favorite authors.
I do like Robert Frost and Maya Angelou, and then I love Nora Roberts for her books.
Oh, Nora Roberts, yeah, she's a good writer, definitely. Good choices.
I mean, I'm learning a lot of the central rights from, like, books that I used to read from my mom's house and stuff. So that's why I'm learning a lot of the different kinds of poet rights.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Yep.
And that's the way, to do it. No, I love it when Pammy asks that question because that's the way to do it. And we haven't heard Nora Roberts come up yet. She's a very talented poetess, so I'm glad you brought that to the forefront. Very cool.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Gavin.
So you were saying earlier about how this feels like a heavy metal piece, right? And I think I disagree. I think it has more elements of punk rock in a way where it's very anti-authority, anti-hypocrisy sort of narrative. So that this is what I picked up. And then I think that you did a really good job of portraying your perspective in this particular piece, because a lot of political poetry seems to get very message-oriented, where this is much more like emotional expression from like personal experience, right? And that's the reason why a lot of us choose to take political sides in these perspectives, because it draws from our own experiences, like something that you've experienced adds to the conversation in this way. So I think that this is a great way of expressing that. So it's great.
Thank you. If only I could sing.
Well, you're in luck, because Pam used to have a punk rock band. Pam, would you like to read this poem again in your punk rock singing voice?
Maybe another time.
But Gavin, I think calling me to the carpet, I think you're 100% right. Yeah, no, I think it's definitely more frilled lip political than just screaming high pitched notes. So I totally agree with your comment. I think it's very well received. I like that. Alrighty, Jenny, your next poem, Just Real Words or Real Love, is up right when you are.
The just words are real love. I don't understand your reasoning. I don't know where your heart is. You say you like me. You even say you care. But tell me one thing. How do I know they're not just words? Somehow, it's hard for me to believe what's true and what's a game. All I know is my love for you isn't false. I know I care for you. I can prove my words speak the truth. Once I prove my love to you, though, I'm scared you'll leave me yet again. I never again want to be without you. Speak to me only the truth, and I will too. If you don't desire, then tie you down, I will not. But play with my feelings, put up with it, I will not. Having you want me, sweeping me off my feet would be so sweet. How can I tell if you mean it? How do I know they are not just words? All I request is for you to be truthful. No time to waste. Time is of the essence, for we are not going to be forever youthful. And so on.
Us old people can still have love too, Jenny. Don't feel that there's no timetable on it. Go ahead, Pam, your turn.
Yep, especially when you get that little blue pill, just like you're young again.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, man. Great read and write there, Jenny. A great write on, to me, that speaks on wanting to know where someone stands, because, you know, you've stated how you feel, and now it's time for them to speak up and say, you know what, this is how I feel. And I also like how this speaks on insecurities. Once I prove my love to you, though I'm scared you'll leave me yet again. I never again want to be without you. Speak to me only the truth, and I will too. You know, in any type of relationship, whether it's a romantic relationship or a friendship, you know, honesty and respect are two of the most important things. You know, I really thought this was just a thoughtful write all the way through, and very well done. I'd like to know what it was about this particular piece that spoke to you, that was one that you wanted to share.
Funny thing is, I wrote this back in, like, I don't know, I'm 37 now, so my early 20s when I first started dating my now husband. And back then I didn't know, you know, he was truthful or not, but now that we're married, obviously he was. So I just kind of wanted to bring this to attention because it's kind of like an ironic, like, oh, the twist, he does love me type of thing.
Very cool. Well, I'm glad you were both able to discover that together. You know, sometimes it's not easy to learn to trust people, but it's nice when you find someone you can.
Yes.
Agreed. Great question. Great comments, Pam. Go ahead, Gavin.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, so I think I really like this piece because it kind of expresses the baggage that comes along with new relationship energy. Like, especially if you have trust issues, it's hard to believe people, not just initially, I guess, too, but like even years down the road, because there'll be a time where you suspect that they're withholding some sort of information. So, I mean, this is a recurring theme that happens, and you know, love isn't all just flowers. Yeah, you know, like the rose has thorns. So I think this kind of captures that really well. I think no time to waste, time is of the essence, kind of expresses that mortality of, like, we really have to be careful with our decisions of who we choose to spend that time with, because we want it to last as long as possible, right? We want that decision to be a well-paid off one, because, like, that's a commitment of your life, you know? Yeah, good poem.
Exactly, yeah.
Excellent comments, Gavin. Yeah, no, great comments. What I really dug about this one, Jenny, is the honesty. I think Pam just hit on it really, really adequately. But any time that a poet opens their heart, it's so much easier for an audience to connect, at least in my experience. When I find something where someone is very honest in their work, I want to read more and more because I trust them, and the words feel more sincere, and they feel more accentuated, I guess. The emotional tie that I have with what they're trying to convey feels genuine, and I appreciate their poetry more, and that's definitely the case in this one. This one almost felt to me like a diary entry. It's a very personal write, and it comes across as something very honest and something very sweet as well, something you always want. That pining, that love, that concern that they have, and that hope, those fingers crossed that this voice in this poem has, that the love comes real, is something that everyone wants to have an outside person feel for them. You always want to be wanted, and I feel that want in this poem. Because it seems so personal, and you did say that it is based to a degree on your current husband, your relationship with your current husband early on, when you write something like this, how much there's a twofold question. First of all, when you write it, is it personal, or are you thinking about the audience or the object or the muse reading it? And then second, once it's published, do you get a little pink in the face? I mean, does your husband read this, or do you know it now? Do you share it? How does your audience affect your work is my easy way to put the question.
Well, I get kind of nervous that if people get offended usually, but they don't, luckily, so far anyway. But I usually just write out, like I said, in my journals, like it's write out, and then I just, like, catch the typos rarely. I'm like, oh, no. But I do edit when I catch them, but I just write it out as I'm feeling. And then if it's good for a contest, then I enter it and then go from there. But it's usually just heartfelt, and I'm blind with rage or excitement, and I just write until I can't write anymore.
And I like that. No, I know that. I've done that too. I've been worried that someone would misinterpret or be offended or take a poem the other way of where I'm coming. So I get that that trepidation, because I think it's valid. So great answer. All right. Well, believe it or not, we're already about halfway through. We're already a little bit beyond halfway through, and I want to give you a chance to toot your own trumpet, to kind of tell us a little bit more about yourself and where we can find your work. Do you have anything published? Do you have work in other places besides All Poetry? Or how do we get to the maximum exposure to Jenny Hunt 2017, or now Jenny the Deep?
Well, I don't have any social media except allpoetry.com. I was going to try to publish some, but it ended up being like a scam. So now I don't know where to go to publish my work. And so right now I'm just trying to save to make a book with All Poetry, but yeah, all I have right now is you guys, and then the groups I just share with on here.
Very cool. Well, that counts, Pam. Do you want to give her the spiel, or do you want me to run through the spiel about publishing work?
Oh, you go ahead. You're so much better at that spiel than I am. I feel like that is your territory.
Jenny, there are tons of people here. I'm one of them that is self-published. It's super, super easy. You can do it on Amazon and then sell it for whatever price point you want. There's tons of us here that can walk you through it. It's free to do. It's extremely gratifying. I mean, the community here is awesome, and I think we're all fortunate to be part of Late Night as well. But the community on AP is awesome. But to be able to hold your own book, something that you put together, is a lot of fun. So if you ever want to talk offline with anyone, I can do it. Phil can help you out. There's a number of people that have done it in the past that would – love to show you how to do it. It's as simple as cut and paste on a Word document and then uploading it to Amazon, and they print it per order. It's no dollars out of your pocket. So you're extremely talented. If you have the desire, it's not a scam, and I think you'll find it very fulfilling. So I encourage you to do it. And then you can always, once you do self-publish, you can always put a little tag next to your on your page and kind of promote your own work. So I highly recommend it. It's fulfilling, and you have the tools to do it, sister. You're a very talented poetess, so look into it. Reach out if you'd like.
I will now. Thank you.
In the meantime, everyone, we're not going to make it all the way through our set list. We're about halfway through, but please check out Jenny the Deep on All Poetry. She's put together an amazing set list for us, and beyond that set list, she has a lot of diversity in her poetry, so I encourage everyone to take a deeper dive in the deep. Your next poem, sorry, your next poem, Strength in My Weakness, is up, ready when you are.
This is another journal one, but Strength in My Weakness. I might be weak in spirit and mind, but my love for you is strong. The love I found in you is my greatest find. Please don't give up, even when I'm wrong. My brain is crashing and burning, but my love for you is always yearning. So many blessings in this life, a family, home, job, friends, no strife. There are many reasons to be thankful. As I lay here grateful for it all, my brain lies here waiting for my fall. One step forward, two steps back. Coping skills and self-love is what I lack. Outsiders looking in see me, mom, a wife. They want to see such a happy, blessed life. What no one sees, though, is me dying on the inside for my misery, crying, depression taking over my soul's light, longing for inner happiness. I crave the light. End poem.
Great read, great read. Go ahead, Gavin. Please start us off on this one.
All right. I think what stands out to me in this poem here is the formatting. Like how we have like these rhyme structures We have choices like adding not strife to the end of a line. That's more of like a list. I think a lot of this composition sort of like showed that you had a lot of fun like putting this one together. Like you had a bunch of different things and then you like wove them together, like how you would like crochet it almost. So it had that kind of a feel to it, where it was like a homemade style of crafting for this poem. I don't know if I got that right, but this is kind of how I see it in the stanza representation, especially with the break there in the final stanza, because we have like dying as the end line of a stanza, and then we begin another line with crying. So it has like that a bit of a sonnet form to it, and then it's more of like a contemporary take on traditional stanza crafting. So that's what really popped out to me.
Well, thank you, because I really don't know a lot about the different forms. I just now learned sonnet and everything, so thank you for all that.
No, dude, you got in my brain on that one, Gavin. I was thinking the exact same thing, and I loved even the point that you pointed out, because earlier Jenny said that one of her inspirations was Frost, and Frost definitely sticks to a sonnet form. He sticks to one of the traditional, the Elizabethan sonnets. And you do that, Jenny. You go A-A-B-B. You go C, D, C, D, and then you go to a five line. And then I love the fact that you use the word crochet, Gavin, because that is totally, totally a better word that I would come up with between in the 1, 2, 3, 4th and the fifth between dying and crying and the switch to the three lines. Yeah, Jenny, I think it's really cool when poets aren't afraid to mix and match styles. And you don't have to be fully versed in the classic formats to create something else that works, because for some of us that read a lot of poems, a lot of poetry here on the site, seeing someone be creative with it, I mean, it opens my mind and makes me want to kind of dive in and steal your format here and try it out for myself. So I think that this creative interpretation works so well. And I'm a huge format nerd anyway, so the fact that you did this in such a creative style added a whole nother level that Gavin already covered. So I just kind of want to hitch on his comment and totally agree with what he said. Do you have you do a really good job of rhyme. Rhyme is not easy, and so many poets seem to abandon it these days. Do you have a favorite poetic device that you tend to lean on, or something that makes you smile when you create a poem and you see that you've used a device that works well in your gut? Is there something that you kind of tend to veer towards?
Well, I used to just do free form because free verse, I guess I'm learning and see. But the rhyming I felt was forced. And when I joined IT, I was like, oh no, I shouldn't rhyme. But apparently I'm rhyming better than I thought. So, and lately I've been trying to do more acoustic, because that right there makes me kind of, it's fun and that makes me smile. But I'm trying to, I'm more of a dark, deep poet, and when I try to be more fun, it still is like dark humor. So I try to be more diverse. I don't know.
There's definitely an audience for darkness. I'm a huge fan of it. There is a huge group of us that really enjoy it. So don't think that you need to shy away from it. Acrostics are a great way to add humor. And adds another dimension to poetry. So I think playing with it the way you're doing it, for those that really appreciate poetry, all of us here on AP that are in the game, appreciate what you're doing and appreciate the effort that goes into especially rhyming. Because, yeah, rhyming can come across as forced, but I don't feel that with your stuff, and I would tell you. There's a flow to it,
okay.
And it feels very nice, and it feels natural, and it adds value to the body, in my opinion, because we know the effort is there. So keep it up. You're doing it all right. It's all good, and that's a wonderful answer. Go ahead, Pam. What do you have to say?
Yeah, I definitely agree about Jenny's about your rhyming. It is beautifully done, and I like that you stay true to yourself. I like that this is a write about understanding yourself and how oftentimes, you know, people can't understand what you're going through because they're looking from the outside. You know, they're not seeing the full picture. So as you say, you know, you know, people see who you are, but only a small picture of it. Outsiders looking in see me, mom, a wife. They want to see such a happy, blessed life. What no one sees, though, is my dying on the inside from my misery, you know, crying, depression taking over my soul's life. Again, we have another great write on an important topic because, you know, for some reason with the creative mind, oftentimes seems to go hand in hand with depression and dealing with that. And so definitely one that many people can relate to. Beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you.
Wonderful comments, Pam. I think that's really well put. All right, the next one's a little bit special because this is, if I read the author's note correctly, Jenny's first poem here on AP. So this is where she broke on through. My child is up on the boards, ready when you are.
Yes, my child. My child, my life, my darling. You are my reason for living, wrong or right. You are the hero I believe in with all my might. I need you to always remember. You are talented and smart, my child. You are funny and sweet, my child. You are my hero and friend forever, my child. Never forget, you, my child, are why I'm alive. You, my child, are not a lie. You, my child, will grow up to be old. You, my child, remember to be strong and bold. The future is yours, my child. My love is always yours, my child. My child, I may not always be here physically, but I'll always be here for you spiritually. My love for you, my child, is forever. Live your life to the fullest. It's okay to do it over. End poem.
Hmm. And this one was a tearjerker for me. I mean, I'm the sucker. Sucker for the sappiness of it, Jenny, because it works so good, and it's a lullaby. And it's so, I'm going to assume that it's true. I'm going to assume that you wrote this for your child. And it's a sweet lullaby, and it's something, it's a mother's love for their child that, I don't know, I don't have the talent, I don't have the heart, I don't have the courage to write something so exposed as this. It's very sweet, and it really tugs at heartstrings of a parent as of myself, but I'm envious on how it comes across because, again, I can see sitting in the rocking chair holding your child almost singing this beautiful lullaby is the best way I know how to describe it, and I'm touched. I don't know. I don't need to drone on any further, and I just want to know, since you wrote this some time ago, how does it feel? How does it age with you? Does it still work? Something this personal, and assuming again that it's autobiographical.
Yes, it does. In fact, she's listening right now to the poem. But yeah, every now and then I try to write her a love poem to remind her how special she is to me.
Well, it plays. It comes across. The heart's there. Very sweet, and I'm glad you shared this one, and I'm glad she's listening to it. So know that mom's talented and she loves you. Great poem. Pam, your turn.
Yeah, this is another one with a lot of heart, and I really enjoy and appreciate how open and loving and honest you are, and it really is a blessing to have children, and you can definitely feel your love for your child. I hope some of these poems that you write for her, you'll, you know, have printed out and put in a frame and so she can have them, you know, and I hope she gets the opportunity to read these. She might reach a point in her teenage years where she doesn't appreciate them, but, you know, I think it's just absolutely a wonderful thing. You know, so great writing.
Yes.
And yeah, absolutely. It's just wonderful, wonderful the way you share your heart. Now, do you find it, does it just come naturally to you, or are there times when you're about to post a poem that is so personal and so emotionally charged that you hesitate to share that much of yourself?
Yes, sometimes I do, and then I make it into that's what I make it into, like, a metaphoric, deep story. Like, the whole, the first one I read, it was kind of about me, but not, I kind of make it like that on purpose. So it's, like, kind of a trickier mirage or whatever. But, yeah, the about the My Child one, I do have it printed out for her, and I have a little book for her when she's older, yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Very cool. Mm-hmm.
Great answer. Go ahead, Gavin. What do you got?
This, to me, kind of, like, completely shattered our notions of what it means to be cliche. Because, like, cliches in a lot of times are used as, like, a derogatory, right? But I think that you've attacked that so successfully with this poem to where it feels like you've embodied, like, why we end up using a lot of these cliches. Like, you always need to remember and never forget, right? But it's attached to this repetitive my child sort of a thing to give it that, like, storybook, fairy tale almost, like, quality to where it feels like it's always been around, like it was, like, a missing piece of, like, historical poetry in that way. It has a very professional quality to it, even though it uses these elementary qualities to poem that, like, I run into all the time when I'm writing. And I'm always trying to, like, get around how do I avoid this cliche or how do I avoid that cliche. But like you said, it's like your first poem on AP. So, like, this wouldn't be something that you'd be, like, concerned about in your work. And that, right, that complete disregard for it, that embracing the cliche, I think is so raw and so beautiful that you can only really find in, like, first poems, you know. And this pays such a good tribute to that that I – kind of fell in love with the cliche of it in that regard.
Thank you. And I'm still learning. I'm surprised how many cliches are out there. I was like, oh, that's a cliche. Oh, crud. So, yeah, I'm learning to work on that too.
No, I think that's what I'm sitting here giggling. That's an amazing comment, Gavin. I like the way you said that because, yeah, you can embrace cliche is not even the word, but we'll stick with cliche. You can embrace it. But I think the way that Jenny put it with the honesty, it makes your heart bleed for it. So I think that was a beautiful, beautiful comment, and I think it was very apt because she does. And then, again, with the repetition, the fact that it's just stressing the truthfulness and it's stressing the heart. So wonderful comment, Gavin. That was very well put.
Yes. Thank you, guys. Yes.
All right. Your next one, Don't Let Pain Win, is up. Ready when you are.
Oh, it is called Don't Let Pain Win. Pain, it breaks us to our core until we can't take anymore. I'm generally able to relate to this, but the debilitating chronic pain you feel daily, I can only sympathize with this. The pain you feel, unimaginable. The tears you cry, understandable. Whatever you do, please, for us, never give up. If you don't know, you are needed here. You're more important than you realize. No matter what your head tells you or how bad the pain gets, you are prudent to our lives. We love you. We do want you always and forever. Don't let pain win. I won't if you won't. But if you give up, I'll give up. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Don't let the pain break us. Don't let it get the best of us. Don't let the pain kill us. End poem.
Damn. Go ahead, Pam. Start us off, please.
Yeah, that one definitely hits hard. A powerful write, you know, all the way through and beautifully read. I have to say, you do have a wonderful, wonderful reading voice, and definitely a relatable right to anyone who has to deal with chronic pain. And I like your AN and how you say, you know, the how it's a daily challenge and a daily struggle. And if you don't know you are needed here, you're more important than you realize. No matter what your head tells you or how bad the pain gets, you are prudent to our lives. We love you. we do want you always and forever. You know, such a beautiful, heartfelt write to your husband and letting him know how important he is to you. But I feel like it speaks to anybody who suffers from pain and you know, just, and with that pain oftentimes comes depression and the idea of not feeling useful. You know, so just a powerful write and very well done. Thank you for sharing this with us.
Thank you, Pam.
Wonderful comment. Wonderful comment, Pam. Go ahead, Gavin. What do you have to offer?
Yeah, so I like how you begin this poem. Pain, it breaks us to our core. It kind of invites the reader to, like, be open to that sort of a shock right away, right? So it's a very attention-grabbing intro. And then we have the pain you feel, unimaginable, the tears you cry, understandable. So a really interesting parallel, because like, you can't exactly imagine how much pain they must be in, and that in of itself is why it is understandable that the tears come out of it. And then that is in those two lines, right? We have, what, maybe 10 words total, tells an entire story in its own. So there's a piece of brevity inside of it. And then you have, whatever you do, please for us, never give up, is like such a heavy plea afterwards, right? So even though this poem is short, it's a really long walk to get there, right? Even to this point, and we're about halfway through that at that point, right? So, I mean, this is a very heavy poem. That's how I read it, at least. And I felt the pain of it all. And I kind of embraced the invitations that are coming out of it. And it's a good write. Very good.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you. Dang, both you guys had great comments, Pam and Gavin. I love what you guys had to contribute to this one. This one hits home for me, Jenny. Just went through it very, very recently. Had to drive across a couple states to take care of an ailing family member. So this was very timely for me, and I appreciate it for that. You love those that you love, and you never want them to give up, and you hate to see them in pain. And so, yeah, two in a row that have really just punched me right in the heart. And I don't want to delve too much. I don't want you to say anything too personal. What I'm impressed with, and something that that Pam touched on in your author's note, is you put it in a card for your husband, and I think that's really cool. I think the power of sharing your poetry with people, other than just blindly putting it here on AP, but actually purposing a poem for someone, is a beautiful share. And if you're willing, I mean, do you want to talk, you don't have to talk about the specific instance, but just in general, what your experience has been with sharing your poetry with loved ones and how that's helped strengthen any kind of relationships?
Someone bought me a journal to get my emotions out, and they were surprised that I was into poetry this much. Because I wrote poems, but I never really shared it. And I have support from them, which is great, but they're just really surprised I have over 600 poems, and so am I. I didn't realize how big I was into writing. And so it's great to kind of shock and awe them.
That even makes it more special, the fact that you can surprise them and say, hey, look. Look at this Picasso I have hiding behind my back. Badow. I think that's very cool. I think it's cool that that it touches people and that because you're talented. And I like the way you're doing it. We have enough time for one more. So I have Love and Pain on the boards ready when you are.
Oh, okay. 1 second. All right. That one I am not seeing. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me get there. Sorry, I'm finding it. There it is. Okay. Love and Pain. Walking through the dark, dreary valley, I find myself in pain of a broken heart, asking myself, how did this happen? Why you? And why am I still in love with you? I need to open my eyes and realize that I'm no longer wanted. I need to wake up and stop dreaming about love, because all I know is hate. What's the point of loving you without you loving back? What's the point of living if I don't know the purpose? I need to know now, or is it too late? Is it my time to die and your time to cry? All I know is that I no longer exist to you. Now I must start anew. and poem.
I love the author's note that goes with this one. My first poem I did in high school, I wrote this years ago. But if you like this, I have more for you. I think that's great. Go ahead, Gavin, start us off.
Yeah, I was also going to highlight that, too. It's that you did this in high school. I think it kind of captures that essence of, like, the high school angst that comes with, like, the tragedy of young love. I think what really caught me, I think, is all I know is that I no longer exist to you sort of a thing, because it's like once you're done, it's over, you know. And, like, the more that you expose yourself to another person or the more that, like, you guys encounter each other after that moment, it's just like you'd wish that that existence wasn't there, you know, but the reality is so much harsher a lot of the times because you're like stuck together in this high school. Yeah. I don't know. It's a very touching piece that seems like it's contemporary to the exact time that was captured in, like a picture. And I like the picture that's associated with it too. It gives it that warm, reflective sense to it. So it's good. It's pretty deep.
Thank you. I took that Q's Bay, actually, that picture.
And I'm willing to follow Gavin's comments every night because I agree 100%. I like that it's a snapshot. I mean, it's got to be autobiographical, and it's got to be that journal entry. It's got to take you back too, Jenny. I think that it definitely takes you to a mindset that you had at a certain time. I mean, obviously the author note helps, but it's a brilliant snapshot. And again, the honesty of the write makes clarity and makes it so pointed in that timestamp. And I think there's value to that. So I think it's beautiful.
Thank you, Jenny. You've
rocked it. I'm going to let Pam comment after me, but I just want to reinforce that you've rocked it. There was no reason to be nervous. You're a wonderful headliner. And
thank you.
I want you to leave before Pam closes you out. I want to give you the opportunity to give the rest of us some advice. Here on Old Poetry, we're always looking to better our talents. And can you give us some sageful words of wisdom, please?
I guess be patient with the newcomers and always be willing to learn and be open-minded when it comes to other people's poetry because it's not yours, it's theirs, and it's always good to uplift them and encourage them and not knock them down.
See, I've always warned you about that, Pam. Pam, you're the first person to always haze the newbie. Quit doing it. That's wonderful advice. No, we try to encourage people the most we can. So I love the fact that you reemphasized that, Jenny, and you did a wonderful job. Go ahead, Pam. What do you have to offer?
Oh, this is absolutely beautiful, I like that you took the photograph. That's a wonderful. You have a great eye for photography, this is a great write on love and finding purpose. You know, and I don't think I wrote things this deep in high school, so it took me until about my close to like 40 before I started getting deep, and even then it's questionable. But what else, do you have other hobbies besides writing? And holy smokes, did anybody else do that?
Oh, yeah, I like taking photographs, and my husband just got me a guitar, and so I've been trying to practice. I don't know how to play guitar, no. I know two chords, mind you, but I've been trying to add it to my SoundCloud, so you guys might be having some guitar background music in the future.
Oh, I
all
like
you
it.
Need is
very cool. Very cool.
Thank you.
Okay, is anybody else hearing that strange noise that sounds like, you know, UFOs are invading?
Yeah,
okay.
It sounds like we have a call or something.
Okay,
yeah, it sounds like an alien invasion.
Yeah,
sounds
like a ring to me.
I think one of us is about to get abducted.
Oh, no.
It sounds like Jenny. She's going to save a different planet out there somewhere with her poetry.
Out of the box.
Okay, well, the next poet we are going to headline this evening, Gavin Brenner, who's been joining us patiently for the first half of our show. Gavin, I know that you have a little bit of a different format here, and what I'm thinking is you're going to read each vignette, each chapter, and then we can comment. Is that what you're thinking, or do you want to power through? However you want to format it.
I think we can do two parts at a time. You know, give us time to digest it a little bit. Because they kind of do run in duets in a way. Because I kind of have an idea of how it would be published, and you know, you kind of take in what's in front of you at once, which would be both pages, I guess.
Okay, that works. Whatever you're comfortable with. It is your hour, my friend. I will turn the microphone over to you. Lifeboat, Chapter 1, Survival Poems 1 through 8, whenever you're ready.
So each poem will face a different character's perspective, or it'll take place in that character's perspective. So this character is Isabella, and the poem starts part of the group title. It all happened so fast. Everyone was rushing to the lifeboats before I knew what happened, half asleep. I remember the captain shouting, a woman crying, a child screaming, and now I end up here alone. Not everyone made it off safely. Several were still below deck when the water came rushing in. My love smashed her head on the table when the ship rocked. I tried to save her, carried her topside, but the crewman just put her in my lifeboat to watch as her suffering ends. There's only so much we can do to save the ones we love. I did everything I could, but it wasn't enough. If the circumstances were different, no, we wouldn't even be here if they were. Now I wait and think about how much water we have left to drink. In the middle of the sea, I'm thinking about water of all things, while my love bleeds dry on the floor under a tarp. I touch my ring to visualize your face, the memory of your loving smile still warm. Days pass. I'm going crazy, talking to you as if you were here. The other lifeboats separated by the storm last night. The furious rain was nothing compared to the tears I shed for you. The other survivors must be out there somewhere. We have one flare left. Everyone is sick. I'm glad you're not here to see me now, to suffer with us and wonder if it was all for nothing. You took the easy way out, they said, envious of death. I hate them so much, I fought one of them for your honor. I miss you so much, I can only think about how far you are from here by now. And you're here in the boat with us, part of the group. I refuse to send you off to some watery grave. You never deserved this fate. Hours pass. There's a large island on the horizon. Maybe we can survive there for a while, or at least bury you properly on some beautiful island that reminds me of your precious smile. Now we go on to the second poem here, another Isabella, and this one's titled Twisting My Ring. The lifeboat reached the shore, but all were slower than I thought. Seven survivors plus your corpse. We dragged with sadness heavy in our hearts and hands and breath. Priority was to find shelter and water. We crafted makeshift tools of coconut shells and branches from the trees that surrounded us to dig a grave for you with what we had. I dug the most. It was my duty to give you a proper burial. As we worked, I kept glancing at the lifeboat, twisting my ring. On the third day after, we said our farewells. I spoke my heart, my peace, my troubles, but they didn't care to listen. So I whispered to you, hoping you could hear the anguish I felt, the loss I couldn't bear, a place you would have loved. But instead, you lie here buried with only my whispered ceremony. The days passed by, but the pain stayed. I spent them fishing and pondering, trying to come to terms with what happened and the emptiness that filled me. End poem.
Okay. I want to maximize your hour. So I kind of want you to explain what you're doing here with these long series of poems and what kind of feedback you want to give, because I'm sitting here feverishly writing notes, and I want to make sure that I frame this so that you get what you want out of this experience. So can you kind of tell us what you're doing with this and then what kind of feedback you want us to give you?
Yeah, so I was doing like an experimental take as much as I could on trying to sequence a long stream of poems that kept going until I reached a considerable end for a novella of sorts. I don't like prose writing. I think that poetry gives it a lot more flavor and like storytelling aspect. I think that this style of poem can be read almost as a screenplay, but without like the descriptions of the cinematography. Instead, it kind of like allows the character and the narrator to kind of like express the story in a form of diary entry, because the theme of the story is that they're stranded on a deserted island. So the idea is that you, the reader, have found some sort of book and it contains this collection of different diary entries. So that's the idea.
That works. I just wanted to frame it right for everyone. So, Jenny, do you want to start us off with comments on what we've heard so far? J- Jenny, are you still with us?
She is not.
Okay, no worries. I'll start us off on what we've heard so far. Gavin, it's really cool. I like the concept of it. An epic being a long narrative poem, usually involving a hero, is a cool way to experience, like the Odyssey. You think about the great rites that are epics. And I think it's a lost art. You don't see it done this way. You don't see it storied this way with the impact that I felt. Just you're a wonderful reader. I've told you that before. But just the way that you performed this just now, and then your explanation about how it's not to be a screenplay, it's to be its own body. The narrative or the journey of it being prose, but you going further and making it in the poetic form works so well. And the instances that I want to give you, what did I write down here? In the fourth, 1, 2, 3, 4. The fourth was really, really hard to hear. And I like the fact that you included that early on, because that's where the heart of this story really started to unfold for Isabella. Where the ship rocked and she's going to die, and you see the insufferable situation that she's just entered in. So that's when I first got my heartstrings tugged on. And then two stanzas later, there was something, by the way, that you ended that with, "My love bleeds dry on the floor under a tarp." I really liked the word tarp in that, because I thought that was a cool move and is extremely punctual, or it punctuated the fact that she had turned into something else, something that is a commodity as opposed to a loved one. And so I thought the use of under a tarp was really cool. And then further on, what was the next one? Oh, 4 or 5 stanzas later, and you're here in the boot with us, part of the group. Again, there was that same cold-hearted feeling that I had with the word tarp with part of the group in that. So I think there's a lot of moves that you made in this that were extremely successful. And then the fact that you switched gears on the Mustang, and all of a sudden we're on the shore, and it becomes something different, and it became something more personal about the narrative voices struggle with everything that happened, twisting my ring, the anguish I felt, I couldn't, lost the bear. All of a sudden you're on the island, and you realize that something tragically has happened. So the break was apropos. It was right because the perspective changed. So I'm into it, and I dig it, and I hope you continue to go along this path, because it's intriguing, and it was definitely something that I would invest in. It was something with my time, my money, whatever it takes, because it's a writing style that works so well. And again, your presentation, the way that you perform poetry, I've told you this before, is special. You read very well. You read with a confidence, and you read with a smoothness that those of us that aspire to achieve what you do makes it all the more comfortable. So it's not only me reading it, it's you performing it that makes this whole art that much more thumbs up in my book. So I dig it, man. I think that I've probably talked enough, and I've asked enough questions. I will turn the microphone over to Pam to talk.
Yeah, thanks for the comment.
Absolutely. Well, great comment there, Jeremy. Yeah, I really like this. It's wonderful storytelling. I like how you bring us to the different characters, and each one, as you were saying, is like a diary entry, a first-person narrative of the trauma, the emotions and everything that they're going through. It definitely is a very epic rite. Vast and complex, and great use of, I like that you take us into an almost fanciful environment, and yet, at the same time, you create this sense of strong emotional impact that we can relate to. I get as you were saying that what you were trying to accomplish with these rites, but You have 127 poems on your board, so why these when you could have offered up a variety of smaller rites that would show...
Yeah, I guess that's a great question. I guess it's because this book or this novella that I'm working on here or that I'm reading now is what I'll be publishing here and as soon as it's done. So I guess I wanted to use this as like a way to like plug that and get people interested before it comes out. I could have done a collection of my various works and that sort of stuff, but I think this actually creates a really interesting dichotomy with the last reader, with Jenny, because hers were so like personal in a way that it was like her life story. And I feel like even though we share a lot of the same themes in that write, that this one's more of like a general application to a reader in mind instead of like something that I personally experienced. Like I wasn't stranded on a deserted island. You know, I don't have like lovers that have died. This is something that I wrote like for fun sort of a thing, but to try to like give that reader that same sense of like, you don't have to have experienced all of this stuff in order to fantasize about it and to capture it all. Because like we reflect a lot of this stuff in the world around us all the time. So it's a good way to like, empathize with fantasy characters, I guess, is the best way to do it and why I chose to do it this way. And I guess it's the reason why I chose this series is because this is one of my first series that I've ever done, and I'm, like, going back to it now, and this is something that I'm currently editing. So now that I feel like it's reached a point to where I feel comfortable publishing it, I guess it's a good time to push it out there.
I like that. Very cool.
I'm glad that we don't have Robinson Crusoe on the phone with us, Gavin. So it's glad to hear you're going from the creative aspect of things. And this hour is your hour. You definitely have carte blanche. And to promote, self-promote something that's upcoming, this is a great way to introduce everyone to your writing skill. And it's definitely invited here on this show. So I'm glad that we're going about it this way, man. Great answer. I do want to let you know that Jenny is still with us. She's having some phone issues. She did write you a comment, and she is enjoying your poem. So just know that you'll probably have a note at the end of this that that she's still with us, at least on the board. So she hasn't totally abandoned us. But when you're ready, let's hit off Kathy, Chapter 3.
Yeah, she might not be here with us physically, but she's here with us spiritually. As you
That's
poem.
Right. That's right.
But okay. So we'll start this one off. This takes place of the perspective of the character Kathy. The poem is titled Off This Rock. She sits there, weeping and fishing, a pitiable sight, but I cannot ignore her past hostility towards me. I may have more compassion if she hadn't attacked me after the storm, or perhaps it was before. Time on this island is blurred like watercolors. My husband and son have likely drowned, leaving me to protect my daughter and contend with the other castaways. The woman looks emaciated, her tears mingling with the brine, but I can't shake the memory of her belligerence. Days pass. The crazy one has erected a ramshackle hut by the grave. She murmurs incantations to herself. It's disconcerting, but at least she's docile. Night passes. My daughter is unwell, and I'm at a loss. The storm has drained her, and she's weak. I cannot help but wonder if the crazy one has cursed us with her strange rituals. I am no damsel in distress, but I am lost, alone, and afraid. I must protect my daughter, but how? I need a plan, and soon. The woman continues to fish and weep, a living embodiment of despair. I'm tempted to reach out to her, to find some common ground, or at least a fillet. Days pass. We struggle to survive. It's clear no rescue is imminent. Hunger gnaws at our bellies, and thirst parches our throats. I refuse to give up hope, but it's fading fast. We must find a way off this rock or we'll surely perish here. And we'll go on to Sam. This is Sam's perspective, panic attacks. Mama calls her the witch now, but I don't think she's bad. Somehow, she looks so sad and lost in thought. Perhaps someone she loved a lot. I empathize. It's hard to cope. And someone for you cared for had no hope. I wish I could be her friend, but Mama says to stay away, no end. She says the witch is scary and mean, but maybe she's just lonely and keen. I miss my brother oh so much. It's like a hole in my heart I cannot touch. When I close my eyes, I see his smile. It makes me want to cry for a while. Mama says I'm just having panics, but I didn't know what that meant, just like the Titanic. All I know is sometimes I can't breathe, and I feel like I'm drowning deep beneath. Breathe. I try to focus on the air in my lungs and forget my despair. I think of the sun and the sea and how happy I'll be when we're free. Days pass, and we start to roam, exploring the island so far from home. We walk and talk with sea and sand. Mama talks to all, but the witch won't stand. I yearn to help her to form a bond, but Mama's wrath, I'm scared to respond. So I keep apart like a bashful dove, waiting for calm from the sky above. The island is beautiful in its own way, full of colors and wonders, like a holiday. The stars at night are bright and shining, and the sky is a canvas, always designing. Sometimes I feel so lost and small, like I'm not brave enough at all. But then I think of happy things, like butterflies and shiny rings. Mama calls her the witch again, but I don't think she's playing pretend. I hope someday we can all be friends and make up for all lost ends. And poem.
I love it. Go ahead, Pam. Start us off, please.
Yeah, as always, great read there, Gavin. You know, one of the things I really liked about this, and first of all, it makes me think of the TV show Survivor, but on an emotionally deeper level. What I like is that you have in here to me what is, to me, one of the most important elements of story writing, especially longer stories or books, and that is you have to have the conflict, you know, man versus man, man versus nature, you know, and man versus himself, I think is the other one, though I kind of forget, but you have those, that kind of elements there, that conflict that is needed to carry a story along. And I would like to know how you got started writing.
I can't remember when I started writing. I guess I've always been writing something. I always thought of it as like what I did instead of drawing, you know, like other kids were drawing and I was writing. I fell in love with poetry when I was introduced to Edgar Allan Poe. I think it was The Pit and the Pendulum. It was like a prose story, but the more I like explored like a lot of his works and stuff like that, I really liked the rhythmic structure, like how he was able to tell a story with so few words, choice of language, this kind of stuff like really interested me. And then I started reading Pearl S. Buck and Ayn Rand and stuff like that. So I just started like reading a lot, and I just started writing a lot more. I didn't do all poetry until mid-20s, I think. So I have a backlog of stuff that it's never seen the light and probably never will.
Don't freaking tease us, man. If you've got a whole vault full of poems, I want to see them on the site. We want more. We always want more. And yeah, I love the fact that your influences are Poe and Ayn Rand. Yeah, they both embarrassingly played a much bigger part of my life than I'm willing to admit. So that's a great answer. Great question too, Pam. I love this. I love, for two separate reasons, Kathy. I love Kathy because I can't believe how you tell entire stories in a standalone stanza. Kathy's whole tough life, everything she's experienced on this island, is there's 10 different chapters in these stanzas, and you capture them. You've got me going, and I understand exactly what happened in 4 lines, in 3 lines. You're telling me all these different events that have happened in her life, and there's value to that. And you not only do it, but you do it, you don't give up on poetry. You don't give up on the beauty of words. In the second, has blurred like watercolors. In the fourth, her tears mingling with brine. I really love that, especially. But there's a harshness to Kathy. And what's so cool with how you put Kathy's struggle with everything she's dealing with, the death, the concern for her daughter, everything that she has, it's a real parental feeling and struggle on an impossible situation, is in juxtaposed to what's going on with Sam. And what you did with Sam that's brilliant is that you made it a rhyme. You made it from this child's perspective, and you made a rhyme because Sam thinks he's on vacation. Sam's looking for the sunscreen. Sam realizes that something's wrong. Sam realizes that crazy witch over in the corner that's doing incantations is a problem, but he's still rhyming. And I love that. And you don't make – it's a subtle move, but it's right in your face as well. I don't know how to describe it. You made a move here in this whole – in the story, in the body of this. When you put it all together and you switch gears, that was intelligent just by format. And it makes that childlike voice all the more valid, all the more real, all the more believable, all the more character specific. I don't know. I got a smile when you did that.
I wanted to give Sam this introduction to the rhyme structure of the poem because the book will change as you progress through it. It starts off with free verse and then goes into rhyme and then goes into more like imagery based stuff. So there's like a focus switch as you go through each of these poems, right? And then Sam's going to introduce us to rhyme because I felt that it was appropriate since like a lot of children's stories had like this, like Dr. Seuss had like this rhyme thing to it, you know? So that's kind of what I wanted to appropriate there. But I like how you pointed out that you thought that Sam was a boy, even though like Sam talks or Kathy talks about her daughter constantly, right? There still is like a lot of elements of this like gender swap sort of a thing going through the poem as like a recurring theme because it's unclear, you know? You can't tell it from the first two poems, but Isabella's lover is actually a girl. And the more stuff gets revealed as you go through the poem, so it does have payoffs as you go through the story in that way.
And I didn't even pick up on that. And I think it's awesome. I did not even pick up on the fact that we were going lineal with the relationships of all at all. I mean, I thought we were going with snapshots, like what Pam said earlier, that it's like Lost or whatever. I like that. I like that you have those ties, and it should be more of a lineal connection to all of it. So I'll stop talking, and let's dive into Jess and Maria.
All right. So part five is Jess, poems titled Change Teams. We've been wandering for several days, lost in this island's sandy maze. Who's crazier, witch or bitch? Unclear, but both got the itch. The daughter's sweet, that's true, but beer and showers, all I pursue. This paradise is not what it seems. Solitude left me feeling like a dream. The girls and I get along, but something's missing, something's wrong. Wish there was a man to spice things up, to drink with me from a cup. Never been much one for the ladies, but these itches are driving me crazy. Takes one to know one, they say. Oh, this cell is not where I want to stay. Loneliness weighs heavy on my mind. Feeling left behind, far behind. Maybe the witch knows how to have some fun. Curious, maybe she's the one. Too late to change teams, that's for sure. But bet stealing the lifeboat could be the cure. Escape this island, leave it all behind. Find myself again, see what I can find. End Jess's poem there, and we'll go on to Maria. Without mercy. Everything fell apart one fateful night. When the storm came and took away the light. We were building our shelter, expanding our home, when the wind howled and roared and the rain began to foam. Kathy was taken, her body lifeless and mangled. Sam's cries filled the air, her panic left us tangled. The next day, Jess was gone, the burden of raising Sam too much to bear. She took the lifeboat and the flare gun, and left us in despair. She burned the witch's hut in a confrontation we don't know, a symbol of her loneliness that we may never understand or show. I miss her dearly, but I never had the heart to tell her how I truly felt before she had to depart. She seemed suicidal, her pain too much to bear. I wanted to make her happy, but life can be so unfair. Now there's only three of us left to care for Sam and each other. I hope someone finds us soon before we lose another.
It's drawing me in. I love the story. I love where this is going, and I love how, again, how fast it's progressing. how much I'm already invested in these characters, and we've not, in terms of conventional writing, conventional prose writing, we haven't even scratched the surface. But you're able to hit this with these little poignant stanzas so well. I don't know, man. It's a fun way to write, and it's something that I'm not very familiar with, and I'm still trying to get my arms wrapped around it. I just kind of want you to talk about the process of this, getting into the headspace of each character, as opposed to conventional prose or anything else you've exposed to. What is this process and this whole format, this whole style and approach to telling a story? Tell me more about the experience and what you're getting out of it.
Yeah, so I went to a bookstore, you know, and I bought this book, and it was A Feast for Crows. Yeah, and I had no idea what I was getting myself into, you know, but I was just so immersed. And it's by George R. R. Martin. It was the fourth book in the series, you know, so it was just a random pickup. And then, you know, Game of Thrones came out, and it was a big hit. But I went back and I did through the whole series, and I fell in love with George's style of how he, like, does these character transitions, and then there's all this tragedy involved, and it strays away from the actual, like, battlefield, but it focuses so much on the aftermath of the battle, you know? And I think that's kind of what I wanted to address in, like, my first, like, big novella, is, like, kind of paying tribute to the aftermath of what happens in these events. And it's not just the cause, it's the effect that's highlighted. And that's kind of what put me in the headspace to go about writing in such a way. And then for each character's perspective, I actually designed each of these characters with tarot cards. And then I, like, used that as, like, a symbol of, like, how they should behave in certain ways. So mostly randomly generated.
I love that. I love that process. No, I mean, we can all glean inspiration from different sources, but the fact that it is a little bit more random makes the creation, makes your imagination that much more you. I don't know how to put it. And I love the fact that you said the aftermath, the effect, because really that is the last. That is what lasts with all of us. It's not the actual 5-minute fight. It's the bruise or the black eye that sticks with you for the following 2 weeks. That's what lasts. So you recognizing that in Martin that you like as an author, and then bringing that forward translates. I like it. I like the path that you're taking, because it's definitely successful. Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, first of all, that was really cool to learn that little tidbit of information about how you use the tarot cards to create the characters. That was definitely fascinating. Yeah, great characters, a strong story writing that really grabs and keeps the reader's attention. You know, and so many fascinating characters. Now, I'm sure it's difficult to choose, but if you had to choose, who would you say is your favorite character in these stories, and why?
So this is sort of like a coming of age story for Sam, because this is the first book of a series, and she'll be carried over into the next story. And it's sort of like the whole thing is supposed to be noir themed, because there's this element of, like, murder mystery to it. That's going to come out later in the poems that we're going to read. But she's supposed to embody the femme fatale character in the noir setting. So that'll play in much later in the story. But, yeah, Sam's definitely the femme fatale. And in this one, I think she's my favorite.
Very cool.
I love it, Gavin. And before we move on, I want to give you a chance to shamelessly plug yourself. So you're working on this. Do you want to say what format or what platforms you're going to be selling it or offering it or the title, or go ahead and sing your own song here for a minute and tell us more about how we can get a hold of your work?
Yeah, so my plan is to pump this out on Amazon as cheap as it'll let me do it, because it's not going to be that big. I was going to slap on some extra, like, various works at the end of it, and then jump straight onto publishing book 2, which will pretty much share the same thing, where I'll have, like, excerpts of my other stuff attached to the end of it. And then once the series is complete, then I'll reformat it all to where each of the four pieces of the story are together in one. But that's still further down the road.
Do you want to get? Are you going to publish it under Gavin Brenner? Is that going to be your name that's going to come under? And do you have a title for it so we can look for it?
So the moniker will be my whole name, Gavin Alexander Brenner or Gavin A. Brenner. I guess it would be like the writing moniker. But, yeah, and it'll be under Lifeboat. It would just be the title of it. So it'll be Lifeboat by Gavin Brenner. And then the next book will be Alexandria. And then it'll be part of a series called Who We Are.
And when do you think you're going to have it hit the shelves?
I'd like to shoot for October. If I miss that deadline, then I'd like to wait for February. Just because it's going to either have like a spooky quality to it because it's dark poetry. So I was shooting for that market. And then the other market after that is romance. So try to hit those markets on time and then get more traction.
Definitely make sure that you shoot off one of the flares for us so that we all know when it hits the shelves so we can support you, man. Because this is fun stuff. It's something that we're not very much exposed to on our shows. And I really like the way you're approaching this. It's a lot of fun, and I can't wait to read more. I can't wait to learn more. So
for running my headliner on this, I'm going to send you a signed copy of it if you like it so much.
I'd love it. I'd love it. Go ahead and hit Zoe in the next chapter, Sam, please.
All right. So this will be Zoe's first entry. Her poem's titled Final Wish. 2 years have passed on this barren island shore. Sam, almost 12, skilled with spear and bow. Killing's not her pleasure, but she knows it's the means to survive. Our settlement's a well-oiled machine. Routine and harshness rule the day. 3 weeks ago, we saw Isabella, the witch, by the waterfall, but she slipped away. We searched for her, offering her aid and shelter, but she vanished into the jungle, leaving us with more questions than answers. During our search, we stumbled upon a cave, which was clearly used by Isabella as a shelter long ago. Broken miscellaneous items that had outlived their usefulness were strewn about. We decided to fortify this location as a hunting outpost to stage our operations and to reduce our trip back to camp by several hours. Did I just rhyme? For the first time? See, it's not so hard. What rhymes with hard? I'm no bard. Writing isn't my cup of tea, Maria. I always preferred nonfiction. Maria, oh Maria. As days turned into weeks, our hunger grew stronger every day, and desperation set in. We knew we had to find food. On the hunt for wild boar, Maria fought fiercely by our side, but in the chaos of the chase, the beast broke free and took her life. Her final wish was for me to just end it. Her final words spoke of Jess, her heart's unrequited love. Maria loved to write, and her scribbles kept her sane. Her diary was her prized possession, but it was misplaced like so much else. In times like these, I wonder if we've lost our humanity, when killing and death become routine, and compassion seems like a distant memory. But then Sam's eyes light up at the sight of a crab or a fish, and I remember that we're still alive, and living is enough, at least for now. And we'll go to Sam on the horizon. Zoe and Amanda bicker every day. Amanda's laziness and Zoe's strict ways, never seeing eye to eye, they constantly fight. Breathe. I miss Mom and Maria, their calming ways, their gentle smiles and comforting embrace. Life was simpler when we weren't so alone, when we had more people to call our own. Every night, I scour the island for Isabella, hoping to lift the curse that befell us. Jess will return with a bigger boat someday, but until then, we'll keep waiting and praying. Breathe. Maria always had faith that we'd be saved, that one day our troubles would be waived. Days pass us by, the sun and the sea, until Zoe spies a ship on the horizon, so free. We wave and shout, trying everything to be seen, but the ship keeps moving, distant and mean. Perhaps it was pirates, as Zoe claims, or a figment of our desperation and our dreams. And that's the end of chapter one.
Wonderful read. Pammy, you want to go ahead and start us off?
Yeah, I like... like I said, wonderful storytelling, great dramatization. I think the opening line to part seven, Zoe, Final Wish, is ex- extremely important. 2 years have passed because it's a nice, simple line, but, you know, it obviously acknowledges the passing of time, which can be important to storytelling, you know, and at least, you know, in my thoughts, I feel like too often times, I shouldn't say too often times, but there are times where authors linger too long in one moment in a book, you know, like, and there's no moving of forward of the story. And I think you do that in a very direct way, which allows the reader to know what exactly is going on without overly dwelling on the 2 years passing. So just really great writing. And let's see here. Well, let's see. I know you mentioned couple of favorite authors and writers, but do you have any other favorite authors or poets that you haven't brought up?
I mean, from all poetry, I have a lot of favorite poets. I run into a lot of your guys' work through, like, following along with the chat in Late Night Poets. Probably don't see me, like, interacting a whole lot, but I do lurk. I'm a big fan of Ben Hart's work, actually. After being introduced to his stuff while I was reading it for you guys in one of these events, something about his style actually really caught me. You can tell that he's spent a lot of time doing this. So I've been kind of like learning from like the progress that he's made. I think like favorite authors, the biggest inspiration for this is George R. R. Martin, of course, but like, I don't know if I necessarily drew inspiration from this, but I read a lot of like Upton Sinclair, what is this book here? I have a book series that I like to read a lot called, Babaverse. They're 4 books into their series now. The newest one's, Heaven's River, and it's by Dennis E. Taylor. That's it. So, Dennis E. Taylor is a fantastic author. Give him a shout out. Find his work if you can, but it's a lot of pop culture references entailed in there, but I think it does a much better job than the book Ready Player One at like expressing like how people are, I guess, in our modern times and in like this kind of a world. So I guess, yeah, Dennis E. Taylor's a big influence.
Very cool.
Yeah, and I like what you just said, because I noticed that in this, and you have to do that. That getting into the characters' heads of how you just described Dennis E. Taylor and understanding the different perspectives is not easy to do, especially switching gears the way that you do in this format. So understanding that's an inspiration makes a lot of sense. And I'm a lurker too, man. I love the fact that I'm not the only one. Lurking around AP is a very fun pastime of mine, and I love the fact that doing this show, listening to other shows, I'm exposed to other people that trip across Late Night Poet, our group, because, I become fans. Ben's a big one. I know that you were on the show with us when we did him. Coming across your stuff, I love the fact that I'm exposed to other people's writing styles, gleaning from their inspirations, learning the nuances on how they create, and that's why I like this show, because we're able to understand the inspiration, the nexus of where their inspiration comes from, and then hopefully it makes us all better writers. So I like the fact that that's how you go across and learn more about how to write, craft your style. And that's – I delve into prose a little bit too. In this style, I'm so intrigued by it. Is there a wrestle – an internal wrestle with yourself, or how are you delineating, or do you classify this as poetry, or do you classify it as prose? And if you do, can you tell me about the process of putting together something like this? Is it like writing chapters of poetry, or is it more like mapping out a greater novella?
Yeah, so that's an interesting distinction. I don't know if I would classify it as either poetry or prose, because I think that like poetic epics like this have their own format that was lost, you know? And I guess what I was going for mostly was like the 1300s style of like bardically proclaiming your poem to like a couple strums of the lute while you're doing so, you know. And like when I've like Snapchat with some of my friends, you know, a lot of the times I'll just do like a harmonica story, you know, where I just like have a harmonica and then like I'll say something and then I'll do a little ditty on the harmonica and I'll say something else, you know, and like try to replicate like sound effects and stuff like that with it. So I guess the best thing about storytelling is it can be whatever you want it to be. You don't necessarily have to follow a specific format in order to tell your story. And I was really inspired when I was in like high school because I stumbled upon this like 8-word contest where you could tell a story in 8 words. You know?
Right.
And
right.
I think one of the winners of that was like
Hemingway.
Yeah. Hemingway. I think it was like Used Baby Shoes for Sale or something like that.
Yep.
And I was like, man, it tells so many different stories with that small phrase. You know, like how could I kind of address a lot of that in my work? Is kind of like how I reflected on it. And it's that, like, the reader is going to, like, apply their own memories, their own experiences to whatever it is that they're reading if it's generalized enough, right? And that's kind of what I was going for.
No, for sale baby shoes used once. No, you're exactly right, man. I love that. I love that answer. Very cool. And I love the fact that you're doing harmonica stories with one line. Pam, can you play the harmonica?
No, I do have a harmonica, but I cannot play it. I should put that on my things of list to learn.
Well, next week I'm going to introduce you as a harmonica expert. So I expect you to not only bring it to the show, but I expect you to have accolades on ABC or some kind of late night talk show where they're bringing you on playing your harmonica. Okay, that's your homework assignment.
Oh, there you go.
All righty, Gavin, I won't waste any more time. Go ahead. Lifeboat chapter 2, the pirates are coming. Let's do it.
So I don't know if we have a lot of time to get through the rest of this, but I guess we'll delve into it as far as we can, or unless you'd rather me go off to some more various stuff. Like I said, I'd be throwing on some various stuff.
No,
at the
it's
end
your,
of the book,
it's your it's your hour, my friend. If you want to keep going through this, we have it up. If you want to do something different, we can definitely switch gears. It's up to you. Whatever you're comfortable with.
Yeah, you guys were talking about harmonica and stuff like that. But all right, let's do this because I think this is kind of we can't just leave it off with Sam seeing a boat on the horizon. I mean, that's kind of like a cliffhanger, right?
Exactly.
I'm a big endorser of binge watching. So let's go to poem 9. Isabella's perspective, unrelenting tide. Sam has blossomed into a fierce warrior, imbued with the strength to conquer and aspire. I observe from the shadows, cloaking my scars, my secrets known to no one, hidden from afar. They nearly caught me once as I sought water, my heart racing with the fear of Kathy's daughter. I'm not prepared to face Sam's penetrating gaze, for she reminds me of the love that left me ablaze. Regretful of past events, guilt weighs on my mind, persecuted as a witch, a fate most unkind. Yet I am no victim, for my resilience prevails, defying the unjust persecution that entails. Jess tried to seduce me with her deceitful ways, espousing on love and life, her words a childish phrase. Love is no mere game, nor is life an easy ride, a constant struggle, an unrelenting tide. Her advances, repugnant and repulsive, were met with resistance, defended by the memories of your love, your persistence. She spoke of someone's demise in my arms, bereft of knowledge and pain, unworthy of empathy. Her attempt to manipulate was in vain. I fought back with the might of my heart, for your memory the catalyst that set me apart. As I held the shiv, poised to strike, forgiveness prevailed, and I chose to let life. I fled into the wilderness, leaving all behind. In the serene jungle, solace I did find. Jess's fiery assault destroyed all that I had, but with strength and ingenuity I arose, never sad. Gone she may be, lost to the unforgiving sea, but lurking danger persists, awaiting me. In the distance I see a flag unfurled, a pirate ship on the horizon, its sails curled. My heart races with a mix of fear and rage. We must prepare for their arrival as the next page. The wind carries their laughter, their joyous banter. It's a haunting reminder of the dangers that can conquer. Thus, I must warn the others of a new looming threat. Prepare for battles, fierce and hard-fought. The odds we must upset. I am Isabella, a survivor, a healer, and an unwavering spirit. I'll fight until my last breath. My fate I will not permit. 10. Amanda's Perspective. Title, All Our Might. Stranded here for endless days, familiar with this island's ways, exploring every inch, every nook, to find a way out, just a look. The island's vastness, such a sight, a mystery of what happened, Jess's plight. Her absence leaves us feeling low, lost and stranded, nowhere to go. Suddenly we see her, the witch, running towards us, looking like a fish, afraid and panicked, she seems to be, a welcoming sight in this endless sea. But wait, what's that? Pirates near, a sudden realization, one of fear. We're so screwed, we've got no chance. Against their swords, we cannot dance. Our hope is lost, but we must fight with all our might, with all our luck. We'll find a way out, no matter what. We'll survive this island and not be fucked. End poem.
So the big surprise, the big reveal that I'm going to give you tonight is that Kevin, the owner here at AP, is actually an HBO executive, right? And he's going to award you $20 million to make this a miniseries on HBO. So you do that. You make this on – you become rich and famous and well-known just like Martin. How would you – what kind of box would you put this in? How would you categorize it, or does it kind of hurt your gut to even have to do that? Tell me how you want the audience to receive this and what kind of fan base you think would go for it, because I think it hits on a lot of different ways. You said earlier it goes Halloween. It also goes Valentine's Day. Tell me how you would put this in a box, or does it hurt too much to even ask that question?
You know, a buddy of mine's friends with Hayden Christensen, and he's interested in one of my other intellectual properties. And I had to consider that, like, how do I want it to be boxed, you know? And there's a lot of conflict with that because, like, it's not really – like the way that it's designed right now, you know, fits into the box that it was designed in, that it's this poetic thing, you know, that gives you the sensation of creating this imagery in your mind. So I think with this kind of a story, for it to be adapted into some sort of physical portrayal, then I'd like to see it like in a more abstract way, representing a lot of the ideas behind it. I mean, you can take the liberties that you'd want with the storytelling aspects of it, dialogue and such like that. But the way that it's positioned with the character's perspective, it's hard to accomplish that style of dialogue to the same effect, right? So I think if it were like an HBO series, it'd probably be something more like this, where you have someone sitting down with the book in their hand reading it to you, if that makes sense. Kind of like what was it? Tales from the Crypt, you know? And then it has, like, some excerpts where it, like, clips in, like, some kind of imagery portrayal. But it's, like, you could switch between, like, the real-life person sitting in the chair and then maybe, like, an animation of some kind, you know? I guess that would be the best way to think about it.
No, I like it. And I guess – and that's why my follow-up is, does that affect your writing? Because I really, really, really dig what you're trying to do here because it's so different. And it's working. I mean, you got me hooked. I can't emphasize that enough. But – thinking about how it would go out to the masses, I mean, obviously I'm being facetious with the whole Kevin thing, but thinking about how it's going to be received, does that affect the writing style, or are you just going for this and letting it be what it is and then damn the torpedoes kind of thing?
Yeah, it was kind of like the chances of a book getting a screenplay adaptation is very low. There's some great stories out there that could totally – make incredible movies. Like we were talking about Babaverse earlier with Dennis E. Taylor. Man, if that was a movie, I would watch every one of them. I'd go through, like, I'd throw all my money at that, you know, but it's not. And it'd be really hard for them to adapt that because there's so much content in the books that it's like, if you tried to squeeze it all down, it'd come out like Lord of the Rings, you know? And like, there's nothing wrong with Lord of the Rings movie series, you know, other than the fact that they just leave so much out. And it's the same thing with Game of Thrones. There's so much that's left out. So I feel like if you have a story like this that is in of itself like only 30 minutes, how are you going to stretch that out into a whole movie or a whole series adaptation? So, like, I kind of wanted to leave nothing to be phased out. There's not enough there for you to phase out. You'd have to expand upon it instead of leaving stuff out. So I think that that's kind of the approach to the style, too. Like, if I'm long dead and someone's like, oh, we're going to make a Lifeboat movie, it's like, well, what are you going to take out? We don't have to, you know?
I like that. I like that a lot. Let the audience do a lot of the lifting. I think that's a really good approach to it. I like what you're doing, man. Very cool. Go ahead, Pam.
Yeah, I really like that too. And I have to say, this definitely has been an entertaining and thoughtful evening of poetry and rites and, you know, conversation. I really like that you've created some varied and each in their own way strong female characters without the need to over-sexualize them. You know, there's no mentions of heaving bosoms or hair being tossed as they stand up out of the water, you know, with droplets dripping from their flesh or whatever. It's been too long since I read a book like that. I can't even remember what the words they use are. I think heaving bosoms was one of them. Now, did you immediately know that this was going to be an all-female cast in this story that you're writing? Or did that just happen that way and then you figured, you know, at this point, why bother to put a male in?
Well, so the theme about lifeboats, right, if you're on a ship, the running narrative is women and children first, right? So if you only have a single lifeboat, it'd be women and children. I guess that's kind of like that kind of established that for me, I guess. I guess that answers that.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
Wow, Pam, swing and a miss for you on this whole subtext. All of these women are naked, as far as I know. What have you been doing?
He could have had a man swim up to the island. I mean, come on.
These are all naked Amazon women, Pam. You've missed out totally.
If we remember what just happened in the last, there's actually men approaching the island now, so we get to see what happens when men are introduced to the environment and that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah, exactly. Let's hit, we have enough time for two more, so go ahead and do Zoe and Sam to close us out, please.
All right, so this will be poem 11 in the series. Zoe's perspective, title Part of Our Tribe. Isabella, our savior, guided us through danger. With her warnings, we evaded their anger. If not for her, our presence they'd have found. Our rations revealed, our tracks no longer sound. But we're survivors on this island, on this vast island we stand, prepared for their return with weapons in hand. Isabella, once distant, now part of our tribe. Though still grieving inside, her warmth we describe. The stars above, the sand below, together we'll thrive, our bond will only grow. For Maria. This is poem 12, Sam's perspective, Bloodied Gown. Isabella teaches me so much, showing me how to be brave and such. We'll fight pirates if they come by, but I don't like killing. I'm too shy. Isabella, Zoe, and Amanda all claim to keep dangers tame. Her love never harmed a thing. I don't like hunting, but the food it brings. Days pass. I become skilled with a bow, ready to protect my family. Life's no show. I'll do what it takes, even if I'm scared, to keep them safe and prove I cared. On the hunt, I let Maria down. Our formation broke, bloodied gown. But Isabella's words keep me inspired to be brave and careful and never mired. When anxiety creeps up and tries, I remember to breathe and realize. Breathe. I'll do what it takes to do what's right, to protect my family in dire fight. They count on me, and I won't let them fall. I'll be there for them,
one and all. End poem.
Wonderful read. Go ahead, Pam.
Oh, yeah, that is wonderful. And, yeah, I like that this particular section focuses on character change and growth. You know, I thought that was really well done there. The idea of how they're all, you know, survivors, they're all, you know, growing together. There's a real spiritual sense to this, and I'm glad you decided to share this with us. And I won't ask a question because I'm sure Jeremy's going to ask, you know, about your words of wisdom and advice for poets, and that'll be a nice way to close out the questioning.
Absolutely, man. This has been a fun little dive. It's something totally different than what we normally do on the show. I think as presenting prose to us, this is a very cool, fresh take on that endeavor. And I just want to say to everyone that Gavin is an incredibly talented poet as well. If you don't read this as or hear this as conventional poetry, look into the other stuff he has here on AP. I've been recently exposed to what he creates here, and I've been very, very pleasantly surprised. He's very talented. It comes through in this prose, Gavin. This is a really cool project, and I can't wait for it to hit the hit paper so we can all buy it and support you, man, because this is a cool endeavor for sure. And, yeah, I mean, Pam set it up perfectly. I want to give you the opportunity to give us some parting words, give us some advice, and sign us off for the evening, Gavin. You've been a wonderful headliner. I appreciate your comments to Jenny's work, and I appreciate you spending this hour with us to share a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so thanks for having me on here. I thought it was a great way to actually get this out there because it's kind of hard to find readers for it in the way of where, like, I started this 4 years ago, and probably 13 people or more that I've, like, introduced it to have, like, went through it. And it's hard to get, like, constructive feedback. So I guess words of wisdom is to, like, always try to, like, read for other people and give them what they might need to, like, get onto the next edit or whatever they're trying to do with it. Because, I mean, a lot of the times you can get some kind of reassurance, you know, but it comes with its own salt because you're not always going to be satisfied with what other people are offering you. They'll say, yeah, it's a good piece and that, but it's more of like, we're kind of looking for how it made you feel, you know, and like, were there any devices that I should be focusing more on that give it that kind of a quality to it, the more immersive sense to it. And like that's the kind of feedback, I guess, like I was looking for. And I know a lot of other people are seeking out, but it's so hard to find out there because there's tons to read. Like everybody wants to be an author. And it's hard to distinguish yourself from that crowd to like get people to go out of their way to give you the feedback you're looking for. So this is a great outlet for that. So that's why I want to thank you for it. Cause that's all I really need to go on with the next chapter too, I guess, is to like see what you liked so much about the first part, you know, and then maybe emphasize more on that later on.
Wonderful words. Thank you so much to Jenny the Deep and Gavin Brenner. You guys were amazing headliners, and I really appreciate you guys spending the evening with us. Have a good night, everybody.